From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of January. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. Gary Schnitke will be here to talk about the ARC PLC decision you'll need to make, especially if you had a prevent plant farm. That could be kind of unique. And we'll get started right away. Jackie Vakes is not here, but in her stead, we have Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Thanks for being with us, Michael. Can you tell me about your recent work?
Well, currently the situation in Brazil, they have two dry areas. One is Rio Grande do Sul, the southernmost state, and also up in northeastern Brazil. Now, Rio Grande do Sul has a history of probably the worst weather in Brazil as far as summer crops are concerned. And the Secretary of Agriculture just recently announced that usually about 7 out of 10 years, they have a moisture deficit in the state for the summer crops. And this year is worse than any time in the last 7 years. So there's some areas of the state now have been over 40 days without a rain. There is rain in the forecast for next week, but in the meantime, the crops have been impacted, especially the full-season corn. And that state accounts for about 19% of Brazil's full-season corn. And unfortunately, the corn is pollinating, filling grain during this hot and dry period. So estimates are they've lost at least 1 million tons of full-season corn in that state. So that's the crop most impacted. Now, that crop, the state is also big on soybean production. They produce about 16% of Brazil's soybeans. But the soybeans are just now starting to flower, so soybeans can also recuperate. So the impact on soybeans is not as great as of yet, but we'll see if that rain develops, you know, later next week.
Can you put this into some perspective as to what it means to the export market, if it means anything, or to their domestic market internally within Brazil?
Okay, for the soybeans, I now have Brazil soybeans at 122 million tons. Still be a record, but just kind of barely a record. I think this is much more important for the corn market, much more important. Brazil is going to be out of corn, essentially no carryover overstocks at all. The company JBS has already announced they're bringing in 200,000 tons of corn from Argentina for the livestock industry in southern Brazil. There's going to be a really, really tight corn situation in Brazil for at least the next 6 months. The Safrinha corn, which is three-quarters of the total, won't be harvested until June or July. And between now and then, it's going to be really tight. So now that Rio Grande do Sul is having a problem with the corn, I expect more companies to announce more corn imports into Brazil to fill the gap between now and the next Safrinha corn harvest. So it gives more opportunities for U.S. corn exports, which we need, of course, because Brazil is going to be not only not exporting corn, it might be bringing in corn to satisfy the livestock sector. I think corn is going to be the story in South America this year, quite frankly. So we'll see.
Will they bring corn in from any place other than Argentina?
They will bring it in from Argentina and from Paraguay. In fact, Paraguay and Brazil signed an agreement over this past year on how to do import and exports, all the sorts of phytosanitary agreements. So they're going to truck corn in from Paraguay into southern Brazil and also truck it in from Argentina. I don't think they buy anything in the United States, but that means the people who would normally buy from Argentina may have to come to the United States because Argentina will have a little bit less corn to export because some's going to Brazil.
That leads us to the global numbers that will be released by USDA on Friday of this week as part of the WASDE, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Do you expect many changes there?
I expect a small reduction in the U.S. Production for both corn and soybeans, acre-wise and also yield-wise, for this past year. Now, I don't think it's going to be the end of the story, though. I don't think we get the final number for 2019 production until we get to the September stocks report, you know, which is 9 months away. This whole planting and harvesting has been so disrupted by the wet weather. There's still corn out in the field. So this will be a small reduction, but I think not the final reduction for the U.S. production numbers for last year.
Will consumption change?
Well, the worry in the market is that demand is going to be just as much down as the production, so it may end up being sort of a wash with a smaller crop from last year.
So this Friday, it won't be just about the crop production report.
No. Right. And I just saw a report this morning that China is going to forego their idea of, you know, blending ethanol into the fuel supply. So right there was just kind of a blow to potential corn exports. Now, China's not a big corn importer from the United States, but the hope was a few years ago when they wanted to do a lot of blending with ethanol that, man, they'd have to import, you know, many, many million tons of corn to meet that goal. But times have changed, and that goal is no longer one of their goals in China.
Yeah, so that report saying that China had laxed the rules that would force ethanol into their gasoline supply because they were just short on corn. Do you think that they might go ahead and import corn? And I know we just had this discussion, but I want to turn it just a little bit. That they might import corn to feed a recovering livestock, in particular, hog industry?
They might import a little, and the hog herd is starting to recover somewhat. So it looks to be more hogs in China in 2020 than it was in 2019. But it's going to take a while to get that hog herd back up to normal. It kind of depends who you talk to. Some people say, you know, 3 years. Others say sooner than that, so we have to kind of wait and see. But it's going to take a while to get a lot of corn imports into China just because the demand from the hog sector is going to take a while to recuperate.
All right. So kind of bottom line, what you're thinking producers should be considering at this point, or how you're viewing both old and new crop corn and soybeans as it relates to price and sales?
Well, I think there's probably a better opportunity for corn. The price isn't all that bad. The demand is kind of weak, but with a corn situation that may not be quite as good in South America, maybe we've got some more opportunity for corn. Now, on the downside is we're going to plant more corn next year. So if we have another big bumper crop, you know, we're going to have still have a big corn supply. The carrier for soybeans is tighter, and South America is probably going to do a record crop. So I think the opportunity for corn is better than for soybeans, but it's not a great opportunity, unfortunately. I can't be very optimistic about, you know, much better prices. It's just we have to work through these burdensome supplies and then the demand issues, all that sort of thing. So it's going to be a while before we see a lot better prices, especially if U.S. farmers plant, you know, 93, 94, 93 million, 95 million acres of corn, and we have a good corn production. That would sort of stymie any big improvements in the price. So I can't be too optimistic about either crop, but I'm more optimistic about corn than soybeans.
Given what you've told me, I suppose that you believe that January the 15th, when there may or may not be an announcement as it relates to negotiations with China and trade, won't make much of a difference to the marketplace.
No, I think the marketplace is very skeptical. I'm very skeptical as well. Yes, we get a phase one agreement. That's better than not having an agreement, okay? So that's good. That's a good start. But the Chinese officials have said over and over again that they don't want to disrupt, you know, market forces and all that sort of thing, and they don't want to just be artificially buying, you know, corn and soy, especially soybeans, to fill up the warehouses just to meet some artificial goal. So they've sort of hedged their bets numerous times about what actually they're going to buy and the timing of those purchases. So I'm very skeptical. I'll wait until they sign the agreements, and then more importantly, if China fulfills their agreement on those agreements. China is notorious for saying one thing and doing another, and we see that all the time. You know, contracts in China are strong suggestions, and they're not, you know, firm commitments. So I'm skeptical.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think the weather we haven't talked about Argentina. The weather in Argentina has improved. It sort of stabilized the crops. And I think the situation to watch in South America will be Brazil, especially southern Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul, and also a little bit up in northeastern Brazil where they've been dry as well. But as a comparison, Rio Grande do Sul does about 16% of Brazil's soybeans, whereas northeastern Brazil does about 12%. So the biggest issue to watch would be far southern Brazil.
Hey, thanks so much.
Sure, anytime.
Michael Cordonnier is with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by agricultural economist, farm management specialist, University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Also, Illinois Extension's Gary Schnitke to take a look at his latest Farm Doc Daily article. Pay close attention to this one because it will have an impact on the decisions that you're about to make as they're related to the crop you harvested. This is an unusual event because the crop insurance, actually, decisions were made some time ago. However, the Farm Bill, or ARC and PLC decisions, while many may have thought, hey, I've made those, haven't been completed yet. And they've got until, what, I think March 15th to do that. And you've got some calculations that they might want to go through, especially if there was a lot of prevent plant on their farms.
Yeah. So you have to March 15th to make the 2019 Farm Bill commodity title choices. So March 15th is well into the 2019 marketing year. And actually, you'll have harvested the 2019 crop. A number of individuals might find ARC-IC a good alternative this year.
Wait a second. ARC-IC?
ARC-IC.
That's different than what most of us think. Usually it's ARC County.
ARC County and PLC. This time around, though, if we're looking at 2019, PLC is not likely to make payment for the 2019 year. We have a 370 reference price for corn. Our market year average price is probably going to be above that. 845 for soybeans. Market price is going to be above that. And we'll have to have low yields for our county to make payment. And there may be some, particularly for soybeans, that make payment. We'll know more about that situation in mid-February, February 20th to be exact. But overall, I would not expect our county or PLC to make payments for either corn or soybeans, probably, though, for wheat. When wheat, you'll want to select PLC if you have that opportunity, if you have base acres, because it will likely make a big payment for PLC on wheat.
Okay, so ARC-IC, what is it, and how and why would you choose that, and will that lock you in for the 2020 growing season to that as
it,
well?
It will. So if you choose ARC-IC, and that's a farm revenue program, it's based on what actually happens on the individual farm, and it's a whole farm policy, so corn and soybeans get lumped together. Here's the situation, though, that matters. Some farms probably took prevent plant. And if they have an FSA farm that was totally prevent plant, they will get the maximum ARC-IC payment on that farm. So if we have one or more FSA farms with total prevent plant, you'll probably want to take ARC-IC. You also probably, we are releasing a calculator today, and you'll want to run just some your farms through that, because you're going to collect all the information you need to do that anyway. So just run it through and see if there's going to be payments under ARC-IC.
All right. So say we have three or four or five FSA farms, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you make this decision and you had one that was prevent plant, you can put one farm into ARC-IC and then make decisions for the other farms that are different. And that would be the same for the 2020 growing season, because the 2 years are linked based on this year's decision.
Yep. So if you have, let's say, five FSA farms, you could choose to enroll one in ARC-IC, and the remainder you could make PLC and ARC County choices. And again, you would want to go through and see which farm makes payments under ARC-IC. One caveat, one important note, if you have two farms that you choose to enroll in ARC-IC, they'll aggregate them together, and our calculator doesn't handle that situation. So one ARC-IC farm is what our calculator looks at now. And so if you begin putting more farms in ARC-IC, you got to be careful with what's going on there.
Do you just divide the total payment by the number of farms then?
No, what you do is they aggregate the guarantees across the farms, and that can be a little bit confusing.
So you'll have to talk to somebody.
Yeah, you'll have to talk to somebody. It's not a times two divide by acres. It's we're working on a calculator to handle the multiple farm situation right now. That gets sort of complicated.
All right. So if they've got one farm, then the cap, and they probably should just go in and see it. And you say they'll have all the information because I assume they're going to have to gather it up before they go to FSA anyway.
Yeah. So ARC-IC is based on a farm guarantee, which uses yields from 2013 to 2017 on that farm. Well, that's the same information that's going to be used on the PLC yield update. So you need to get that information anyway. So go and get that information and make some calculations.
Yeah, and at this point I should ask the next question, because if you're using ARC-IC, you'll want to gather that information up, but people might say, well, I didn't have a prevent plant farm and I'm not going to use ARC-IC, so I guess I don't need to gather that information. For PLC, you would say, yeah, no.
Yeah, I would say do it anyway. So it'd be interesting. So you could have a farm service agency farm that had really good yields from 2013 to 2017, which happened. And then, you know, let's say that your average corn yield is 240, which is quite possible. If you have a 240 corn yield and you got 190 this year, you could be triggering a ARC-IC payment.
Yeah, so essentially you just say, going forward, this doesn't happen that often when you get a chance to update your yields. Yeah. So do it. And if your yield is higher than the last or the current FSA yield, just put it in.
Just do it.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Folks can look for the calculator on the Farm Doc Daily website. In the article, there's a link, I assume.
There's a link, and I would also point to our Farm Bill resources, which is on Farm Doc. It's on the front page. It will lead you to that link, and we have all our calculators and articles dealing with the 2018 Farm Bill.
All right, so if you don't want to search for the article, or you're listening to this sometime after January the 7th, just go to farmdoc.illinois.edu instead of farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, and you'll find all those links. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon and Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you as well. I want to start here in the United States today. I'm a little worried, I guess, about all the rainfall that's coming. And I'm not sure about a couple of things. The saturation level of soils and or how frozen they are. Does this concern you at all?
Yes, I'm pretty concerned. The lower part of the Ohio River itself, close to Paducah, is probably just a hair below flood stage right now. Now, that's just one of the few points. I don't think most of the river is quite like that. But we are going to see 2 to 4 inches of rainfall coming up over the Ohio Basin, the Tennessee Basin, and the Northern Delta this Thursday night through Saturday. And that's going to be a broad-based event. And then we take a little break, but it's going to be cool while we're not getting rain, so it's not going to dry down very well. And we'll go into the middle to latter part of next week, and we'll end up with another 1 to 2 inches of rain and possibly more, but in parts of that region. Now, the latest model data suggests that maybe they'll get lucky and that most of the heavier rains will be south of the Ohio River through the Tennessee Basin. That's good news for the Midwest farmers, but not so good, obviously, for the Tennessee Basin folks. And so there's going to be some significant flooding coming up over this next 10-day period, with I think the middle to latter part of next week probably the peak of it.
Are there differences between the northwest and southeastern parts of the Midwest?
Definitely there is. The jet stream is far enough to the south right now that the upper parts of the Midwest will not be involved with rain. They'll see some waves of snow, but it's not likely to be real substantial snow. It is cold. It's very cold up there. It was 23 degrees below zero this morning at Grand Forks, North Dakota. and it will warm up for a day and then turn colder again, and we'll see some more bitter cold conditions over the weekend. That snow that's already on the ground up there is not going to go anywhere, and there will be some additional light accumulations occurring periodically as we go forward through this next week or so. We're not going to warm up real good. This is going to be a significant, persistent cold air mass anchored over Alberta and parts of Saskatchewan and Montana as we go forward through the next full week to 10 days. It'll take a little bit longer than that for us to see any kind of a break. A lot of the cold is not likely to get into the eastern part of the U.S., at least not as far as extreme potency is concerned. So if you're worried about the heating fuel costs and that kind of thing, I don't think we're going to have to worry too much about that for the eastern part of the United States. But it will get real cold in the plains for a while.
So we've got rain in the southeast, a little bit of snow, and really cold in the northwest. Usually between those two, there might be other types of precipitation. But I don't know when or if it would come. It's really hard to predict, I think, to ice storms. Any problems there?
You know, anytime we get a really impressive cold, shallow air mass like we're going to have here over this next 10 days, the odds of having an ice storm become much higher. And we are going to pour a lot of cold air at low levels of the atmosphere down through the Great Plains. When this cold air begins to abate and the warm air starts to flow back over it, we will have a fairly high potential for some kind of an ice storm event take place. The question right now is, where is that going to be? At the moment, I really don't have a good, solid answer for that, but it's probably going to be somewhere in the interior part of the southern plains, maybe Oklahoma or northern Texas, and from there maybe into parts of eastern Iowa or Illinois, maybe Indiana. So we'll be watching for that. It's probably a week to 10 days from now, probably more 10 days than anything else. So nothing we have to worry about right now.
Speaking of worrying about right now, we had talked about dry weather conditions in parts of South America. Are things still amiss?
You know, over the holidays, we did see some improvement in Argentina. The southwest part of that country had been struggling for weeks with dryness, and the situation gradually got better. We had three significant rain events that occurred in that little corridor down there from Cordoba into parts of Buenos Aires and really helped to moisten things up. They are not too wet by any means. They still have some pockets of dryness, and over this next 10 days, they're probably not going to do as well with rain, and they'll start to dry back down again. But I do not expect to have any kind of a critical shortage of moisture in that area again, at least not in these next couple of weeks. So it should be a pretty good environment for them. In the meantime, while it was raining in the southwest there, it was not raining in the northeast part of the country. And many of the crop areas in northern Argentina have really dried out a bit here over the past 2 weeks. Now, it's supposed to rain in those areas for the next 10 days, a little bit of scattered showers and thunderstorms occurring periodically. Again, no big soaker, but an opportunity for enough precipitation to take the edge off of that stress that might be developing in some areas. So the bottom line, Argentina is really not looking too bad right now. They definitely will need timely rain for a while, though.
Hey, we'll talk with you again next week.
Great. Have a good one.
You too. That is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated.